Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, August 27, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Well, it was a pivotal day in U.S. professional sports on Wednesday as protests over the shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin manifested. The Milwaukee Bucks decided to boycott their playoff game, and all NBA playoff games were postponed, and there were postponements in the WNBA and MLS. And in Major League Baseball, the Brewers and Reds players talked, and their game was postponed, as were games between the Seattle Mariners, who have the highest percentage of African-American players of any team in baseball, and the San Diego Padres. And late last night, the game between the Giants and Dodgers was also postponed. Christian Yelich of the Brewers spoke to the change in baseball wearing a T-shirt that said, "Justice, Equality, Now."
I think it's a huge step today. I've learned a lot, honestly, in these last few months, just speaking to teammates, friends, people that have lived these things and these events and gone through them. And I just can't relate to them on the same level and haven't experienced the same things that they have. So it's been a really eye-opening few months. And you know, we talk about at the beginning of summer camp, what these shirts mean and the shirts that we've been wearing throughout the year. And there comes a time where you have to live it. You have to step up. You can't just wear these shirts and think that's all well and good. And then when it comes time to act on it or make a stand or make a statement, you can't just not do it. And that's what you saw here today is us coming together collectively as a group, making a stand, making a statement for change, for making the world a better place, for equality, for doing the right thing. And we did that as a group. It was a unanimous vote. Everybody was in favor of not playing and sending a message and a statement.
Dominic Smith of the Mets spoke to reporters after the Mets game yesterday. And let me tell you something about Dom Smith. He is as gregarious and warm and welcoming a person as you will ever meet in your lifetime. Someone who I think, like my colleague Tim Kirkchin, looks for the good in people. And you could just hear the pain in his voice last night.
I've been very emotional. Yeah, just to kind of see this, you know, continuously happen. So, it was a long day for me. So, kind of wasn't there mentally, but we'll be all right. I think the most difficult part is to see, like, people still don't care. And for this to just continuously happen, I mean, it just shows just the hate in people's heart. And, I mean that just sucks, you know? And being a black man in America is not easy. So, I mean, like I said, you know, I wasn't there today, but I'll bounce back. I'll be fine.
After the Dodgers postponement, Mookie Betts, manager Dave Roberts, Clayton Kershaw, Kenley Jansen stood together speaking with the reporters. You'll hear first from Mookie Betts and then from Clayton Kershaw.
Change needs to be made. You know, I have to use my platform to at least get the ball rolling. And you know, I talked to my teammates and told them how I felt. And they all were by my side. You know, I can't ask for better teammates than what I have here. And I just appreciate everything that was said and everything that's been done so far.
As a white player on this team, is how can we show support? What's something tangible that we can do to help our black brothers on this team? And you know, once Mookie said that he wasn't going to play, that really started our conversation as a team as what we can do to support that. And we felt the best thing to do was to support that and not playing.
Now, because of that postponement yesterday, the Dodgers and Giants are scheduled to play a doubleheader today starting at 1 p.m. Pacific time. We're going to be talking with Marley Rivera of ESPN coming up about whether or not we expect other postponements today. Before the boycott actions gathered momentum on Wednesday, there were games in progress, a doubleheader between the Braves and the Yankees. The first game was a matchup of New York native Ian Anderson and superstar Gerrit Cole. And for the Braves, it started with a bang with Ronald Acuna Jr.
Great to see Ronald Acuna Jr. back in that leadoff spot. A fly ball hammered deep left field. Welcome back, Ronald. He admires that, baby. Three quarters of the way up the bleachers. There's that home run you talked about, Jeff. A leadoff shot, and Acuna is back with a bang. It's 1-0.
Chip Carey on the Braves television network. That home run was measured at 473 feet, the longest home run Gerrit Cole has ever allowed. Later in the game, Gerrit Cole allowed the second longest home run he'd ever allowed to Marcell Ozuna. The Braves touching him up for three home runs. And meanwhile, Anderson dazzled, holding the Yankees hitless into the sixth inning. And he ended Gerrit Cole's 20-game winning streak. The Yankees lose the first game of the doubleheader 5-1. They lost the second game as well. And during that game, Aaron Judge was pulled due to a calf issue. Boone telling reporters, doesn't seem to be serious, but we'll see tomorrow. He acknowledged there's a possibility Judge will go back on the injured list. Before that doubleheader, the Yankees acquired veteran catcher Rob Brantley from the Giants for cash considerations. We continue to wait and see if there are going to be any big trades before the August 31st deadline. One of those might involve Mike Clevinger of the Indians, who was back in their rotation pitching against the Twins. He threw well, and he got support from Jose Ramirez.
Game on, fellas.
There's a drive to deep right field down the line, and it is a home run. Jose Ramirez with a three-run shot, and the Indians take the lead.
And the Indians would go on and win 6-3. That from the Indians television network. We'll have to wait and see if that was Mike Clevinger's last start for the Cleveland Indians. The Mets and the Marlins, and Jacob deGrom was outstanding.
Last year, DeGrom set his career high, striking out 14 Marlins. He's got 13 tonight. And make it 14 as he gets Anderson looking. Jacob DeGrom ties his career high with 14 strikeouts.
Gary Cohen on SNY, the final score there, Mets 5, Marlins 4. Now, before we get to Marley Rivera and Jason Benetti, the White Sox play-by-play man who got to call Lucas Giolito's no-hitter, and Jesse Rogers to talk about the trade deadline, I want to tell you about the latest episode of the Woj Pod. It's a must-listen. ESPN NBA reporter Malika Andrews joined Woj to go inside the intensive 24 hours inside the bubble that could shape the future of the league, beginning with the Milwaukee Bucks' decision to boycott a playoff game, the domino impact it had on the rest of teams and sports, and an emotional league-wide meeting on Wednesday night that left the league uncertain that it would complete the playoffs in the wake of more police brutality in America. Listen to the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirectTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Marley Rivera covers baseball for ESPN. Marley, first off, we start with this. Boy, 2020, just unprecedented in everything we're seeing. How you doing?
Doing all right. It really is very interesting. We're seeing things unfold very quickly, Buster, at how things seem to be changing. All the time we were thinking that coronavirus was the thing that was going to stop sports this season, but apparently there are things that are much more important than that.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, sort of big picture on this, you know, baseball at one time was at the forefront of the conversation about social change. You know, 1947, the Dodgers, they bring in Jackie Robinson to Major League Baseball, breaking baseball's color barrier. And the first time that the Dodgers go to play in Cincinnati, fans are all over Jackie Robinson. And Pee Wee Reese, who is his teammate, and I, you know, told the story. I was lucky enough to meet him when I was 11 years old. I was honored. You know, Pee Wee Reese, who grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, heard all the things being said to Jackie Robinson and basically went over, and we don't know exactly whether he literally put his arm around him, but he supported him in that moment. And that was baseball in 1947. It feels now in 2020 that baseball is more reactive, that it's not necessarily proactive. You know, Colin Kaepernick, when he started kneeling in 2016, only one player that year in Major League Baseball kneeled. Bruce Maxwell, catcher for the Oakland Athletics, who subsequently, you know, talked to Howard Bryan about how he didn't necessarily feel supported within the sport. Adam Jones of the Orioles talked about how, you know, there'd be players, African-American players, who wouldn't necessarily want to stand out because they didn't feel like they would be supported. Well, yesterday, such a different perspective. By the end of the day, hours after the Bucks boycotted, you've got the Los Angeles Dodgers meeting. They hear the Mookie Betts has decided he's not going to play. And all the Dodgers come together and say, well, we're not going to play either. It was a remarkable day at a remarkable time in the sport.
Absolutely, Buster. And throughout this process, I mean, as you well know, a couple of weeks ago, we did this extended piece talking to Black and African-American players and their experience in baseball. And I had the opportunity also to talk to Bruce Maxwell. And what really struck me during that time is how afraid Major League Baseball players, Black and African-American Major League Baseball players, are still afraid to speak out. And it's going to be interesting what happens this Friday, you know, because this Friday, August 28th, is the celebration of Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. Usually it happens on April 15th, but of course, because of the coronavirus delayed season, we are doing it this Friday. And we saw those games, you know, those three games being called last night in protest, not only of the shooting, but just in general, standing up with Black Lives Matter. And what these players said with the Players Coalition on opening day, they stood there and they stood together, they held a black ribbon and took a knee on July 23rd on opening day in Washington, D.C. And they said, we're going to stand together. You know, we know that they, Aaron Hicks and Giancarlo Stanton, took a knee, like the first Yankees to take a knee in front of the, you know, of the American flag while singing the national anthem to stand up for the things they believe in. And we don't see that in baseball. Baseball has not been in the forefront of that, not only because African-American and Black representation has dwindled throughout the years. We know the numbers right now are simply, to put it mildly, pathetic. It's really interesting to see that the timing of this is going to show really where baseball is going to stand. I can't say, Buster, that I was not disappointed in some of the teams that chose to play yesterday when some of their Black teammates decided not to. But this is something that Major League Baseball is going to have to deal with, and it's going to have to deal with it immediately because those specs are going to be very, very prominent when the Yankees and the Mets are playing a doubleheader this Friday on Jackie Robinson Day.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see some boycotts in the next 48 hours. I have no information that would feed that, but it feels like that this is developing within baseball. And let's face it, you know, I know that everyone's talking about it's a 60-game season and they're playing, you know, the Yankees scheduled the three doubleheaders in 5 days to get 60-game season. It's a bootleg season. Everybody knows it. And if a couple of teams, you know, fall short of that because of postponements, because of rain or you know, a coronavirus outbreak, it's not a big deal. And that's part of the reason why, in the past, I think there might be some reluctance within the culture of the sport, maybe an adherence to the schedule. But now, given the fact that there are no fans in the stands, I think the players are going to feel some freedom to act today and tomorrow. And I think the Dodgers really shaped the response we're going to see from a lot of teams moving forward. What do you think?
Absolutely. And not only that, when I talked to Dave Roberts, as we know, one of the two African-American managers in baseball now with Dusty Baker, he said, if not now, when, Buster? This is precisely what is happening in baseball. Baseball has been behind, right? We know that the numbers are not there. You know, it's not the same thing when the NBA goes on a protest or when the NFL goes on a protest. Black players have support. They have strengthened numbers. That doesn't happen in baseball, which is why you can't blame them some of the time for not standing up for what they believe in, because they don't feel supported. I mean, Bruce Maxwell has been very open about the fact that he feels that he was blackballed by baseball by choosing to take a stand by taking a knee while playing the national anthem. So it's going to be interesting to see if these players continue to feel empowered, if Jason Hayward stands there and says what he believes in, if Theo Epstein, right, like stands there and says what he believes in, because he has been very outspoken about how Major League Baseball also has to change in the executive aspect and the fact that we have such poor minority representation on that level. So this is the time, Buster. There is another time. Baseball is faced with a very, very important, you know, moment in society. And of course, there is a pandemic. Let's be very clear. You know, you and I, we live in New York City. We know how hard this has been, probably more than anyone in the United States. So we know how it goes. But this is a problem with systemic racism. And that is an entirely different issue. And that is an issue that affects every single person that lives in this country. Every single person that lives in this country has to pay attention to this, because this is an important moment of history in history. And Major League Baseball has an opportunity, an important one, to take a stand for their players this Friday.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Major League Baseball, you know, the central office gets out ahead of it. You know, to this point, again, yeah, it feels like they've been reactive. You mentioned Jason Hayward. You know, last night he spoke with reporters and he talked about getting text messages from players around Major League Baseball in support for his decision to sit out last night, including Mookie Betts. The quote from Jason, "It's time for us to stand up and be a part of the cause and not just sweep it under the rug." There were multiple guys saying they weren't comfortable going out there and playing if I wasn't going to go out there. They didn't want to leave me hanging. I encouraged them, go and play the game, but I have to do what I have to do. So we'll see what happens today. And Marley, I there's no, you know, there's no smooth transition into another topic.
Yep.
But last
you
night,
Buster, this is a, I'll use, you know what? I'm going to allow you to use the words of Aaron Boone. It's 2020, baby. Let's move on. Like,
right,
it's just,
exactly.
This is the only way we can transition.
Yes. We're talking about social justice. And now let's talk about a possible calf injury involving Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Before you go, tell me the update on that, because that obviously was a huge concern and very interesting, given the sort of the dynamic that was back and forth between the team and Aaron about putting him on the injured list.
Absolutely. The first thing that you mentioned is the dynamic. Aaron Judge in the beginning being very adamant about the fact, even going on social media and saying, you know, basically, you know, in so many words to summarize, I didn't want to go on the IL. It was unnecessary. I was healthy. I wanted to be out there for that series against the Rays, right? So now we know that after the Subway Series gets canceled last weekend and the Yankees didn't play a single game since last Thursday, and then due to weather, they end up having to play a doubleheader in Atlanta yesterday. In game one, Aaron Judge wasn't on the field. For game two, he was. First at bat against Max Fried, no problem. Second at bat, a hit, goes to first base, and then running to second, apparently tweaks his right calf again. Gets taken off the field in the sixth inning and subbed in defensively by Brett Gardner. And this is the problem. Aaron Judge is a superstar, and the Yankees need him on the field. And this is just one more issue for this very injury-prone player, which is really unfortunate to say that. With that much talent, what he did in 2017 and since 2018, and let's be clear, in 18 he was hit by a pitch. So that wasn't his responsibility. But since last year, we're seeing this little nagging injury that gets compounded with the fact that Giancarlo Stanton is also off the field, and DJ LeMahieu, and Gleyber Torres. So then it shines a light on all these injuries that the Yankees are having. And not only that, they need Aaron Judge on the field, particularly because the Yankees are right now on a 5-game losing streak, which you would say, oh, just 5 games, but 5 games matter in a 60-game season.
I've got 45 seconds left. Give me a thought on Ian Anderson with his debut yesterday with the Braves. He was impressive. And how about Ronald Acuna Jr. returning to the Braves lineup with that 473-foot home run off Gerrit Cole?
I'll just say this. Vanderbilt. Wow. It was just so fun to watch, Buster. And it was just such a fun time to see these guys out there. And not only that, to see a great game by Dansby Swanson, too, on the same game. What a pleasure to see this young talent on a season that all we see, Buster, are injuries. What a pleasure to see him just excel to that, you know, to that point. Having been born in New York, you know, in New York State and be a Red Sox fan, I can't even imagine how much of an exciting moment that was for Ian against the New York Yankees with his first major league win.
Yeah, you love the smile on his face as that was getting wrapped up. All right, Marley, thanks for doing this.
Of course. Thanks, Buster.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN. And Jesse, with everything that started yesterday with the Milwaukee Bucks deciding to boycott and all the dominoes that filed, where were you? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was watching the White Sox game. They were playing an afternoon game. I was looking for that second consecutive no-hitter to write about, but that didn't happen. Though the Sox won again, they're a story in itself. And then the dominoes started to fall, got word about the Brewers thinking about following the Bucks' lead, And we all know what happened after that. I quickly got in the car and actually drove up to Milwaukee. I live in between Chicago, Milwaukee is Kenosha. And I live near Kenosha where all the civil unrest happened. So drove past that and arrived in Milwaukee last night to do some Sports Center. And it's an eerie feeling right now in the area. People are locked in their houses unless you're protesting. And if you're protesting, you're taking your life in your own hands these days. We saw two people get killed a couple nights ago. So it's something none of us have ever experienced. And, you know, hopefully there's some good that comes out of this. I know players, athletes are figuring out what the right thing to do Buster is, and right now, last night, for them, the right thing was not to play. They know it's not going to change the world in that moment, but they're trying to take some action, something we probably haven't seen out of athletes in our lifetime, right? There have been moments where athletes have been activists, but not in this way, refusing to play and trying to alert the world of what's going on. I commend them, whether you agree or not, Buster, with their cause. These are multimillionaires. They could just go back to their mansions, back to their yachts, and be fine. Play baseball, play basketball, and be fine. They are taking a stand for people that are less fortunate than them, and you have to respect that, whether you believe in the cause or the actions themselves.
Anthony Rizzo, first baseman for the Cubs, was outspoken after the game. But before we talk about that, just real quick follow-up, you know, driving through those areas where the protests were, what was that like? And, you know, things pop up on your phone, that sort of thing?
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. As I'm driving on the highway past Kenosha, My phone had, you sometimes get an alert for weather or an Amber alert. This was a piercing, I've never got an alert like this. It was a piercing, sound coming from my phone. I pick it up, and the first one says, civil unrest, curfew enacted, do not leave your house. So I'm driving past the area where that happened, which is Antioch, Illinois. That's where the 17-year-old lived, who was arrested yesterday for what he did a couple nights ago. Then I get to Kenosha, and the next alert I get, I've never seen this alert, same sound, piercing, buzzing sound from my phone. I pick it up. It says, gas pumps shut off east of the highway. Do not get off highway. Do not pull into gas stations, something like that. Never seen alert, gas pumps shut off. And so I keep going and eventually get past that area and make it to Milwaukee. But these are things that we've never experienced in our life. It's just crazy.
What did you think of what Anthony Rizzo said to reporters after the game? Because he was blunt as a sledgehammer.
He really was. And it reminds me of some things we talked about during the labor problems. I'll get to that in a second. But for people that don't know, Rizzo really took on the politicians last night, and he kept on saying that he has experience in this area because he, of course, went to high school down in Florida where one of the school shootings occurred just a couple years ago, and Parkland. He's been involved in the politics of that. And what I'm getting at about the labor negotiations is the next step for these players, and I said this to you back in March and April, in May, is that they're going to have to pressure ownership. Players can only do so much. They can sit out a game. They can march. They can say their cause. But if you want to bring up politicians, that's where ownership can get involved. We know that owners of sports teams have ties to politics much more than any of us. And ironically, or coincidentally, whatever word you want to use, Rizzo's ownership has a brother who's the governor of Nebraska, another brother who's the finance chairman for Trump's reelection campaign, has a sister. I'm talking about the Ricketts family here. They have a sister who's deeply involved in Democratic politics. So if they want to enact change through politics or through politicians, look to their own owners. And that's just one family. We know many and many of these families can enact change through politics. Through their ownership. I understand where he's coming from. And I know that these players feel like they're helpless at times. They're trying to help a cause that is like pushing a boulder up a hill. They need some help. And where that help can come from is ownership.
So I did the morning radio show here at ESPN this morning, talking with Zubin and Keyshawn and Jay Will. And they, we talked a lot about how it played out yesterday. And baseball certainly felt like it was reactive and it was not necessarily proactive. The Bucks decide they're not going to play. And then the conversations start with the Brewers, and then the Mariners decide they're not going to play. And by the end of the game, end of the day, the Dodger players, hearing that Mookie Betts is not going to play, say, you know what, if Mookie's not going to play, then we're not going to play. I do wonder, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, if the Cubs, after Jason Hayward decided he wasn't going to play yesterday, and the Cardinals, after Dexter Fowler decided he wasn't going to play, if they had a chance to do it over again, that they would have. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you might be right. I'll give the Cubs a small pass. They were in Detroit, Eastern time zone. This all popped up a lot earlier,
right,
closer to game time, than it did for anybody playing West, like the Dodgers. I think so. I will state emphatically, Jason Hayward might be the most respected player on the Chicago Cubs and one of the most respected in the league. He is so tight with the Anthony Rizzos and his manager, David Ross, who, by the way, in his Zoom was in tears after the game, just supporting Jason Hayward. Because, I mean, think about the black players in this. They're on a roller coaster. They want to play the game, but they want to be just in their actions and activism, and Jason's on a roller coaster, and yeah, maybe they should have or would have, but I know that Jason supported them to play, and I believe that. But at the end of the day, optics are important in these things. But Buster, we have to, there's no right answer here. There's just, you know, you're working on something that's uncharted, and with less time East Coast than West Coast, I get how well it went down for the Cubs. It was 30 minutes before game time.
Yep.
And in general, let's face it, there are less African-American players in baseball. It's predominantly so in basketball. Their activism is a little bit more clear cut. But I will say, listening to the Brewers last night, Ryan Braun, Brent Suter, Christian Yelich, white players taking the lead on this from the Brewers and talking about, honestly talking about, Buster, how much they've learned from Lorenzo Cain and other black players in baseball over the last few months, just since George Floyd's death. And I believe them. The conversations going on in baseball locker rooms and clubhouses, Buster, has almost never gone on. So there is something good coming out of this, and it's choppy, right? It's one step forward, one step back. Teams and players don't know what to do. So I'm not going to come down on anybody that played last night. It would be great in some sense if there was a unified, you know, let's all play or let's all not play and really make a statement, but that's not as easy as it sounds.
No, and I want to make clear, I'm not saying that that the Cubs shouldn't have played. I just think the way that the events played out, by the end of the day, I think the sport got to a point where I was like, you know what? If somebody doesn't want to play, then we're going to support them by not playing. And that was a process. And it just so happened, as you rightly point out, events were happening. And so, you know, for the Cubs, they had less time to process it. For the Cardinals, less time to process it. There's no way to gracefully pivot to talk about trade talk after this, but I'm going to go ahead and just do it anyway, because it's also going on as we go. As you and I talk, we're now just 4 days and about, 6 hours away from baseball's trade deadline. Mike Clevinger goes out last night. He pitches well for the Indians. They win the game. I just, based on what I've heard, I think it's 50-50 that he gets traded before Monday's deadline. What do you think?
Yeah, it's really interesting that Zach Plesac is still down, but Clevinger's up. I mean, there's got to be something to that, right? In terms of showcasing him a little bit. And I heard from early on, before the pandemic was even over, the shutdown was still going on, that the Indians would eventually be in some sort of sell mode. Now, they're playing much better than I think anyone thought they'd be. That pitching staff is amazing, maybe with or without Clevinger. So it still is in the back of my mind that they wanted to move some salary. This gives them a reason to do it. Obviously, Clevinger has some baggage going on. I'm going to say yes, he gets moved. I mean, there are teams. I'm in Chicago. The White Sox could use a starter. Man, that team's fun to watch, but they need a little bit more pitching. Cubs, for example, need a bullpen arm. There are so many teams that are kind of in it that need help. I'm interested in the teams like the Indians or the Giants that might sell but still be in the hunt. Because if you're in the playoff race right now, I mean, you don't have to be a team 10 over 500 to make the playoffs, right? You could be 500. The Giants are basically that team. The Giants are a lot of fun to watch, but they have some pieces that it might be smart to sell, regroup, retool a little bit, yet still compete. Now, it's tough to sell that to the fan base, Buster, but I think you'd agree with me. There's going to be some selling, and those teams are still going to be in the race. It's not just going to be the Pirates and the Mariners. I think there's going to be some of those mid-level teams that will move some pieces like Clevinger and still be in it. So it's going to be very interesting come Monday.
I've heard from other teams they believe that the Indians are open to the idea of moving him. For the right offer, they will absolutely move him. We got 45 seconds left. Can throw a quick one at you. You know, there's a lot of speculation about Trevor Bauer, and perhaps he could move. I got to tell you, this is a classic case of 2020 manifesting with the weirdness. He's making a lot of money this year. And if a team trades for Trevor Bauer before the deadline, they would only have him for 5 or 6 starts. So what's that worth in the trade market? And given the fact that the Reds could just give him a qualifying offer and get draft pick compensation in return, I kind of wonder if that the value of that might be a lot higher than anything you're going to get in trade in this weird season. What do you think?
Yeah, what I've heard is the best trade candidates are the ones with a year and a month left. That's a trade that each side can conceptualize, a year and a month, right? A month is very difficult to get much in return. It's an interesting concept. The qualifying offer, get the draft pick. Is that a better trade option. Plus, you keep Bauer for the final month. I mean, the Reds have underachieved, but that doesn't mean they can't go on a run. It makes a lot of sense. I haven't presented that scenario to an executive. Would you rather get the draft pick via qualifying offer than a prospect for the 1 month rental? I think you're onto something there. No one's giving up much over 1 month, right? With 1 month to go, a desperate team might. I don't even know which team that is. You know, that would give up a grade A type of prospect for a 1 month rental. So yes, I think the year and a month guy. I mean, I don't know. You know, Chris Bryant's been on the block for 2 years. If he was healthy and the Cubs are out of it, he'd probably be a candidate at the deadline. There's some teams that could use some right-handed hitters, but for 1 month, it's a difficult trade to be done. It'll happen. They'll happen. I just don't know if it's going to be a big name.
No. And we talked the other day about how every dollar matters to these teams. Now Yankees laying off 150 employees. If a team takes on Trevor Bauer, that's taking on for just 1 month because of his prorated salary. It's about $3 million. So I wonder if that's going to scare some teams away as well. All right, Jesse, thanks for doing this.
You got it, Buster. Take care.
Jason Benetti is an ESPN and Chicago White Sox play-by-play man. And the other night, Jason, you got to call Lucas Giolito's no-hitter. How many no-hitters is that for you, and what was that like?
Number two, if you count Justin Germano throwing a perfect game against my Syracuse Chiefs in 2011. But in Major League Baseball, number one. And it was very special because of Lucas, especially in 2018, being as bad as he was and the remade version showing up last year. I was just happy for the guy. I mean, to know what he went through and to revamp what he was on the greatest stage of baseball was pretty impressive. And then to cement a portion of his legacy with that was a really cool thing to watch.
Okay. As it was going on, please explain your personal philosophy when it comes to putting air quotes, no hit superstitions as an announcer. How are you handling that?
So for fun, for the first couple innings, like the fifth and sixth, the reason I'll explain, I didn't specifically say no hitter until the seventh, but I had a friend of mine in the minors. Her name's Katrina Wall. She was a beat writer for the Roanoke Times for the Salem Avalanche. And I used to come out of the booth every once in a while and say, "Hey, he's got a near no hitter. That was a near no hitter." And she'd say things like, "It's not a near no hitter until like the seventh or the eighth." So I didn't want to get blamed for the fifth inning comment of no hitter. But once we got to the seventh inning, I was saying no hitter straightforward, and Stoney was too. So we very much defied superstition for the final three innings, and everything went okay.
Now, this Sunday, we've got Phillies and Braves. Jake Arrieta is going to be on the mound for the Phillies, and it'll be on the five-year anniversary of his no-hitter against the Dodgers on Sunday Night Baseball. And I, you know, sideline reporter for that game. And in the first and second inning, Arrieta's stuff that night was so good that it was like, oh, my God. And the reaction of the Dodger hitters, and there was a ball hit to second base, and the official score ruled it an error. And I told the producer in the truck, I'm like, you better clip that off, because we might be coming back to that call later in the game, because that's how good his stuff is. And look, I've said that other times too, and have it not be a no-hitter. As you're doing that game the other night with Giolito, when is it coming in your head, wow, he's got a chance, especially against the Pirates?
Yeah, it was pretty much the sixth inning. Once Lucas got through the fifth, and the second time through the order showed pretty clearly that it was going to be the same tune as the first time through the order, that's when Sony and I looked at each other and were like, oh, well, this very well might be. I mean, then they started mixing in sliders. I mean, James McCann called a marvelous game. He started mixing in sliders, which Lucas had only thrown, I want to say, five in the first six innings. The all three batters in the seventh, I want to say, got a first pitch slider. So then it was like, okay, let's get a little bit ahead of them. Let's play chess against checkers. And watching Lucas's demeanor during the half innings when the Sox were batting late in the game, we had a really strong feeling he was going to go do it. And then what's funny is, I mean, he missed on the final pitch of the game, and he knew he missed. And you watch his reaction, and his head goes down, and he's watching it in right field. And I think we asked Danny Mendick after our game yesterday, the Sox second baseman, what he thought off the bat, and he said hit, absolutely hit. And Adam Engel got a great jump. So it was an awesome night.
And I tell you what, you know, we played yesterday on the podcast your interview that you and Steve Stone did with him after the game. I loved Lucas's joy. Like he, you know, this ascension that he's made, as you mentioned, in 2018, I think it was 62 pitchers qualified for the ERA title, and he was dead last at 6.13. And, you know, and the next closest was like three quarters of a run better than he was. And then to now have him in this place where he's one of baseball's most dominant pitchers, boy, that joy just absolutely came through in that interview you guys did.
The guy, I mean, he is very much like a nerdy 26-year-old. Like he will sit on Twitch and play video games and talk to fans and answer whatever question. Like, and I say that in the most endearing way. He's got, especially considering everything that's happened in sports over the last 24 hours as we talk here, Lucas was the first guy to support Tim Anderson last year, and he has such a wonderful, caring soul that I love the idea that he threw a no-hitter as something to give him the ability, whenever his career's done, to be that even further advocate for change and for social good and for being kind to your fellow man. I mean, he is a generous soul. I mean, we interviewed him during the game yesterday on the phone, and one of the first things he wanted to talk about was how his dog Louie got sick a couple days prior to the no-hitter, and his wife Ari had to take him to the vet, and they were worried that it was going to be a cancer diagnosis, and everything's okay with Louie now. But his heart is always in somebody else's body.
30 seconds. How much fun is it to watch this White Sox team?
Dude, you said joy. I mean, that's what this is. I mean, it's a bunch of 20-year-olds making the 30-year-olds on the team into 20-year-olds again. It's a celebration of offense and of the game every time they go out. And they've been playing so well that it's easy to do that. But you watch Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert and Tim Anderson. I mean, it's coming out of their pores how much they love playing together. So it's been a ride, Buster. It really has.
Jason, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. First one up, we got Ja Ty Joe at Ja Ty Joe 87. The Rays have 14 pitchers with wins and 10 with saves. Is Kevin Cash manager of the year in the AL? I don't think you mentioned him yesterday.
Yeah, I think I mention him? I mentioned Bob Melvin, and I mentioned him as possibilities. Maybe I didn't. I really feel like that you could almost, the team that has the most wins in the American League, that should be the manager of the year, you know, especially in a 60-game season.
Yeah, make it easy. Next up, Christopher Savage at Savage and Beast writes in, do you think the Yankees' recent slide is due to intermittent play / players on the IL, or is it a sign they weren't as good as we thought they would be? Is it just a moot point since they will just be rolled by the Rays whenever they meet in the playoffs?
There's some confidence right there. I think it's all the above with the Yankees. The injuries, you can't downplay the injuries. You know, you lose Aaron Judge, you lose DJ LeMahieu, you lose Aroldis Chapman, you lose Zach Britton. It's going to have an impact. And on the other hand, I think the rotation between, Masahiro Tanaka struggles and James Paxton before he went on the injured list, they haven't performed as well. I do think that as they get players back, they will be dangerous. And we talked about this last week. The Tampa Bay Rays are not afraid of the Yankees. There is confidence in the Rays when they play the Yankees. I don't know if they'd roll them, though. We'll have to withhold that thought.
I do like the confidence, Christopher. Twofer from Andrew Hobbs to close this one up today at Hobbs Presents. The first one, he writes in, any benefit of having the same bullpen pitcher who finished game one, start game two of a doubleheader? Interesting strategy question. No,
Andrew. And I tell you why, because remember, you know, that it's not like game one just rolls immediately into game two. They have a break, and it's sort of like, we always ask the question, when there's a rain delay, will the pitcher come back out when play restarts? And there's such a gap of shutdown time. I don't think there's any way any team would consider doing that.
Got it. And last one for today. Braves pitcher Ian Anderson was brilliant in his debut. How much of it is batters haven't seen him versus his talent?
Yeah, he had tremendous mound presence yesterday. There was so much confidence. You could see in his face how happy he was. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, so I don't know how much like family members or how many of those, because he grew up in New York, are Yankee fans.
But man, he looked absolutely comfortable. That all said, there's no doubt that now, based on the information team saw, they'll develop a scouting report on him. And maybe they spit on one of the three pitches he was throwing yesterday. Maybe they find a way to corner him. But that first outing was very promising. And what a win for the Braves, by the way. You got a rookie pitcher making his major league debut going up against Gerrit Cole, and you win that game and the one that follows. It feels like a turning point for the Braves.
Completely agree. I watched that second game last night. What a statement for the Braves, putting the rest of the NL East on notice, ending Gerrit Cole's streak. I mean, what those are a pair of big wins for the Braves. The Yankees keep sliding. I mean, a lot of implications in those two games. It was fun to watch. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Marley, to Jason, to Jesse, to Taylor. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, everybody. And before we go, I want you to listen to former NBA player Robert Horry talking about watching the shooting, video of the shooting the other day, and having a conversation with his kid.
You know, for me, in today, well, yesterday, you know, I was sitting there and I started crying. And my wife walks in, she's like, "Are you crying because you turned 50 today?" And I started laughing. I'm like, "No." I said, "Did you see the video of this guy getting shot?" And first, I saw it. I'm looking at it. I thought, well, maybe they're going to tase him, right? Because that's what they do with white people. They tase them. And so I didn't have the volume up. And then Christian walks in the room. He says, "No, Dad, they shot him." So I play it again. I'm like, wow. They shoot this guy 7 times in the back. And then I have this conversation with Christian, and he's like, that's wrong. I said, yo, it is beyond wrong. It's just flat out evil. And I'm telling him, and it's hard to tell your 14-year-old son that I worry about him when he walks out that door. I have a 21-year-old son. I worry about him because black men are endangered species, pretty much. These cops are just killing because they feel like if they don't have their body cams on, they have a right. And I tell my kids all the time, I said, dude, I don't care what's going on, because at the end of the day, I want you coming home to me. If you have to lay down on the ground and they can kick you, beat you, at least you're going to go to the hospital and you're going to come home to me. Don't, whatever they say to you, don't take it upon yourself to let that rage you have against that cop come out, because he has the gun. He can end you. And I don't want him to end you, because if he ends you, that means I'm going to end him. and I know that's wrong for me to say, but I'm so much a time to kill type of guy, like Samuel Jackson, you know, and this is going to happen with me. And I said, I don't want that to happen. I already lost one child. I don't need to lose another. And I don't think people understand, especially white people, how hard it is for black people to watch that.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.